What the heck should I feed my cat? Part 5, the basics. Hello there, guys. This is your animal nutrition wizard and podcast host, Trinity. I hope everyone had a happy and safe 4th of July. I know it can be a really tough time for many pet owners and their pets, and so hopefully some of you saw my last live Q&A on my Facebook page. I did provide tips on how to help your dogs especially, to stay calm when fireworks are going off. My own dog has never had any issues with fireworks. I was lucky enough to find some really good training books before I brought her home that I read through and had some really great tips on how to desensitize your pets to loud noises and scary things that might happen throughout their life, like fireworks shows and thunderstorms and things, cars backfiring, things like that. So, if you haven't watched that my last live Q&A from last Tuesday, you might go and check that out if you want to be prepared for next 4th of July or New Year's Eve. So this is the final piece of how to feed a cat. This is lesson 14, I think. And as a refresher, the final rule number 5, is to feed a diet that has little to no synthetic additives or other unsafe ingredients. And it probably seems pretty obvious not to feed your pet unsafe ingredients, but it can be difficult to spot which ingredients are potentially unsafe to begin with. There may be ingredients that are unsafe and you didn't know they were unsafe. So how can you avoid them if you don't know what they are? And some of you also may be wondering, well, what's wrong with synthetic additives? Most of the vitamins and minerals are synthetic additives, so aren't those good? So I'm going to answer all of those questions in this episode. And in the future, I will also be providing just quick and easy guides on these ingredients on my Facebook group at facebook.com/askthewizard for references that anyone can use. And I will also be providing more in-depth details on these on my Patreon page, patreon.com/askthewizard, for those who are my patrons. And as a quick side note, just kind of a fun thing to know, at the end of my patron-only guides, I will be providing a in-depth quiz, and anyone who passes that quiz will receive a wizard token as physical proof that they are now also wizards in animal nutrition. So all that being said, let's talk about rule number 5, shall we? First, let's talk about the basics as to why we should feed a diet that has very few, or ideally zero, synthetic additives. While it's important to keep in mind that synthetic ingredients are added in high quantities to food that is more processed, the more heat-treated and processed a food is, the more synthetic nutrients it needs to have added back in, and the longer it's meant to stay sitting on a shelf, or the more unstable the nutrients within, the more synthetic preservatives it needs as well. So one way you can think of synthetic additives is as an indicator that a food has been highly processed. And if you already listened to lesson 13, which was the last rule, feed a diet that has little to no heating and processing, you already have the basics on why a heated and processed food is a problem. When chicken meat, for example, is brought to a pet food manufacturing plant, it's usually already been rendered, which means it's already gone through heat processing. Then it's added to a mound of ingredients collected to make a batch of pet food, where it gets extruded and is therefore processed and heated again, and then after extrusion, it's dried with more heat. And as we talked about in the last lesson, denatured proteins, which is proteins exposed to high heat, are low quality and have lost most of their nutritional value. So by the time the, you know, chicken meat or beef meat or lamb meat or whatever meat is listed gets put into the bag of food to be sent to a store and sold to you, it's already gone through 3 or 4 processes and heat treatments. And to make up for the amino acids effectively destroyed in the meat through that process, pet food manufacturers will often do 2 things. They will either add in plant material, such as pea protein or soy protein or wheat or corn gluten, to make up for some of those lost amino acids using plant forms, which are not as easily digested by dogs or cats, or they will add back in synthetic amino acids, the most common of which is L-lysine, as it's most susceptible to denaturation. Some manufacturers will do both if both the meat-based and the plant-based amino acids are still lacking. And this brings us to another synthetic additive that is a good indicator of low-quality, high-processed food, which is free amino acids. The most common, again, is L-lysine, but you may also see D-L-methionine, cysteine, taurine, and L-carnitine. These are all amino acids, and they are found in large quantities in animal meat, but they're lacking in processed pet food and therefore re-added synthetically to make up for potentially low quality and or small quantities of meat in the food. So essentially, when you see synthetic vitamins and minerals and synthetic amino acids in the food, this is a really easy way to tell that the food contains ingredients that are low quality and or highly processed. But why are synthetic vitamins and minerals a problem? Well, that's a bit more complicated, but it's really worth talking about and knowing, so I am going to dig into that a bit right now. Synthetic vitamins are isolates, that is, fractions and pieces of natural vitamins that have been created in a lab or manufactured during an industrial process. They are made from chemicals, often industrial waste, to mimic a piece of naturally occurring vitamin. When I say fractions of vitamins, a really good example that I can provide you is vitamin C. The synthetic version of vitamin C that is added to both people and pet foods is ascorbic acid. Now, naturally occurring vitamins are often referred to as whole food complexes, and real natural vitamins are rather complex. That is, of course, why they're called complexes. Ascorbic acid only makes up the outer layer, or roughly 5% of natural vitamin C. And so when you use synthetic vitamin C, instead of natural vitamin C that you would find in, say, strawberries or parsley or oranges, you are missing out on 95% of that vitamin. And not only that, but the naturally occurring vitamins, which appear to have more benefits to our bodies based upon hundreds of studies, are eaten in a whole food, meaning it comes with all of the other vitamins, minerals, cofactors, and enzymes that work together synergistically to provide the best absorption and optimal use and benefit for the body. So vitamins don't work alone. They're not solo performers. They work alongside enzymes and minerals in a incredibly complex and still not fully understood way, in lots of ways. Vitamins, minerals, trace minerals, phytonutrients, and their cofactors, they all work together collaboratively. And their interdependence is vital and ridiculously complicated. So for pet food manufacturers and the researchers that work for them to assume that we can emulate without error what nature has perfected over billions of years with, frankly, rather simple synthetics that we've only begun to understand and only started creating about 100 years ago is kind of crazy. Vitamins are really insanely complex, and when consumed in their whole food forms, all of the other nutrients within the food works together the way it's supposed to. That's why they're called whole foods. When trying to simply add in synthetic fragments of vitamins that we've made from chemicals and industrial waste to try and make up for processed non-whole food diets, it's easy to see how problems can occur. And indeed, we've seen disease in dogs and cats grow exponentially over the years. From diabetes to kidney disease to pancreatitis, leaky gut syndrome, to allergies to seemingly everything, to chronic skin issues, our dogs and cats are eating highly processed, heat-treated, overly sugary foods that have synthetic vitamins added back in simply to meet in most cases, a simple chemical test to say it's complete and balanced. One of the very first vitamins that was isolated was vitamin C, or ascorbic acid. And this was back in 1923 by a Hungarian biochemist, and it was then synthesized later by Haworth and Hirst. Now, over time, more synthetic vitamins were made, and it became really common to start fortifying processed foods with synthetic vitamins. We found in some cases it would help solve problems in humans. You'll find most synthetic vitamins added back into cereals and breads like niacin, which has helped quite a bit in reducing pregnancy issues. And it's also added, of course, into commercial pet foods. But we started realizing as early as the 1940s that synthetic vitamins don't work the same as their natural counterparts. In 1942, the American Medical Association found that treating scurvy with 50 cc's of lemon juice that has about 25 milligrams of vitamin C actually produced better and quicker results than treating them with 25 milligrams of ascorbic acid given as a synthetic vitamin. And ascorbic acid didn't remain as in the body for as long as natural vitamin C either. We have found many, many other limitations of synthetic vitamins having to do with their lacking in synergistic cofactors or their handedness, which is a whole other complex chemical property that I won't get into, but suffice it to say, these are some definite known limitations of synthetic vitamins, and there's plenty more that we probably don't know about. Research shows us synthetic vitamins just don't always act like their real food counterparts, and even with today's, you know, more sophisticated vitamin supplements and research than we had in the 1920s, this is all still true. And again, this is in part due to the fact that synthetic vitamins are merely chemical isolates. They are isolated or fractionated pieces of the whole vitamin. Vitamins are really defined as a group or a complex or organic compounds, and it's best to think of them this way. Vitamin activity is, as one person says, the sum of many, many parts, and that's a really good way to put it. And synthetic fragments of vitamins can never be as good or work as well as providing fresh whole foods with their naturally occurring vitamin complexes. So now that we've covered the basics as to why we want to avoid synthetic ingredients, I haven't talked that much about synthetic preservatives, so this will also lead me into the last part of this lesson, which is talking about unsafe ingredients. So now I'm going to talk about those a bit. There are some synthetic preservatives which should be avoided in your pet's food due to their potentially toxic and even carcinogenic properties. Those include BHT, BHA, ethoxyquin, propylene glycol, TBHQ, and propylgalate. These should be avoided at all costs. The other synthetic forms of preservatives that are very common and are far less problematic are tocopherols, citric acid, and rosemary extract. Mixed tocopherols are the synthetic form of vitamin E, and rosemary extract can be derived from potentially toxic solvents but can also be obtained through safer methods. These are preferable to the ones I mentioned avoiding, but are also synthetically derived, and if possible, would be ideally not in the food as well. A good way to avoid most of these, for you kitty owners, is to look at canned or frozen foods. Canned food does not need to be stabilized the same way bagged food does, so you can actually often avoid preservatives in a good quality canned food, and frozen foods often only have tocopherols or rosemary as a preservative. The better ones have none at all or use an organic rosemary extract, and it'll say so on the label. Some unsafe ingredients, which I will keep short because this would be a whole other lesson in and of itself, include cereal grains, celery powder, fish meals, ambiguous meals and fats, which we talked about a bit in a previous lesson, artificial colors, digest, unnamed byproducts, something else we've also talked about, but basically if the label names the specific part, that's okay, like tripe or liver, that's good. What we don't want is simply byproducts, because then we don't know what part of the animal it is. And cottonseed oil, vegetable oils, and anything hydrolyzed.
These are all potentially unsafe ingredients. Cereal grains are high on the glycemic index. They're difficult for your cat to digest and obtain nutrients from, and all too often they harbor carcinogenic mold, which is not killed off by high heat. They also often come from GMO crops, which use harmful pesticides. Celery powder is essentially a sneaky way for food manufacturers to use nitrates in the food, which are converted to nitrite in the stomach, and they can combine with other compounds in meat or in the digestive tract, and they can form carcinogenic compounds such as nitrosamines. Fish meals, said very simply and in the shortest way possible, are often preserved with ethoxyquin, which is a dangerous synthetic preservative, contain high levels of mercury, come from unsustainable options of fish such as salmon and menhaden, and are a detriment to our oceans, and Pacific fish are best avoided due to radiation levels. Ambiguous meals and fats, as I've mentioned before, are the most likely to come from what's known as 4D meats. These are things such as roadkill, slaughtered or diseased farmed animals, and grocery store waste. The FDA has stated that these ambiguous byproduct meals and digests in particular are the most likely to contain pentobarbital, which is the drug used to euthanize pets and some farm animals. Artificial colors have undergone many studies linking them to mood disorders and are often a cause of allergic responses. Vegetable oils are highly subject to oxidation because they're high level of polyunsaturated fats. They're difficult for cats and dogs to digest and are a poor source of fat compared to animal fats. Cottonseed oils are also one of the crops affected by toxic mold. And hydrolyzed ingredients are pre-digested using a chemical process, the long-term effects of which these ingredients are unknown, and hydrolyzed ingredients are often added to over-the-counter foods as a way to create MSG in the food, which is a palatability enhancer that comes from an excitotoxin, and this can cause neural damage. MSG is banned or severely limited in many other countries for this reason. When all is said and done, the less of these ingredients that are in your cat's food, the better. So, in conclusion, having little to no synthetic additives or unsafe ingredients in your cat's food is rule number 5 of how to feed your cat a healthy diet. It's more important, in my opinion, to ensure that your diet has a high level of moisture and a high quality source of protein, but this is still a very important rule to follow, and it's number 5 for a reason, because I think it's more important to get in the moisture than to worry about these ingredients, but you definitely want to pay attention to this as well. As always, I am happy to provide references and resources upon request, and I'm always down to answer any questions you may have about anything I've said in my podcasts. You can reach out to me through Facebook, on my page, or my group, and during my live Q&As, which I host on my page every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So I hope you learned a lot and had fun doing it. I thank you so much for listening and supporting me however you can, and I hope to keep empowering and educating my fellow pet owners in a positive, important way. So feed those kitties like you mean it, and remember, nutrition is magic.
Hey listener, I'd like to tell you a bit about the Animal Nutrition Wizard. She is an independent pet nutrition coach and the host of this podcast, Trinity Thresher. She currently has certifications from Nina Liu and Holly and Hugo, 6 years of experience in the field, and does independent study and research. She provides coaching, consultations, guides, and more through donations only, whereas the average cost for a pet nutrition consultation ranges from $75 to $500. The ultimate goal is to create a nonprofit organization that provides these benefits on a larger scale, and to create a certification program for the Animal Nutrition Wizard's seal of approval for members of the pet food industry to strive to achieve. This seal would let pet owners know that products using it are safe and healthy. Your support is the driving force that helps to maintain and grow this dream. Thank you.